Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore.
Covering the heart is deceitful above all things. Enjoy the episode. Like, I'm sorry, Jeff. I can't even do a happy intro with this. I don't want to do this. I don't want to talk about this movie. I just don't want to be here. Get out of my fucking apartment. Get.
Just want me to leave.
Just go. Just leave. No, I don't want to do it.
Folks, welcome to the third era of Easy Riders. We are kickstarting this thing with dynamite today.
I don't want to talk about this movie. I really don't want to.
Because that's right. Like Rachel Weisz in The Mummy.
No! I don't want to talk.
Opened the Book of the Dead and unleashed an ancient curse upon our podcast studio. Because this week, folks, we're talking about the most cursed movie we'll ever cover on the show. Probably. Probably.
If anything is more cursed than this, I will.
We'd have to cover, like, The Twilight Zone in the movie.
I will kill myself.
Yeah.
This is bad juju, guys. This is a bad episode.
Just folks, we're covering The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. A movie with a cursed backstory, a cursed production, and a cursed legacy.
Cursed through every single dimension.
Yes, every single possible lens. Look at this
movie. I feel icky. I have bugs in my skin.
We're forced watching this movie because Winona Ryder is in it.
I don't want to do it, though. She's uncredited. Let's just stop.
We gotta. So I want to just kind of delve right into the context here.
Okay.
Because I watched this movie yesterday. I watched it 2 days ago. And the whole time I was just like, I knew going into it that this would be kind of a complicated episode to talk about because of there were various like sexual assault allegations involved in this movie.
Yes.
Between Asia Argento, who's the director who was one of the accusers of Harvey Weinstein. And then also that Jimmy Bennett, who plays her son in this movie, alleged later that she groomed him during this production and eventually raped him 10 years later. So that's like immediately something that I knew like we'd have to kind of handle with some tact.
Yeah.
But I watched the movie and I posted my little review of it on Letterboxd. I'm like, can't believe I have to talk about this movie because Winona Ryder's in it for 1 minute. And frequent guest of the show, Cole Bradley, reaches out to me. And he's like, Jeff, do you know the context around that movie? And I was like, I know about the allegations. And he's like, that's only the tip of the iceberg. Do you know the story behind how that movie gets made? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, there's a documentary you should watch called Author, the J.T. Leroy Story. And so I watched this movie yesterday. I watched the documentary.
Wait. Author?
The J.T. Leroy Story. Because...
Okay, 2016.
Stuart. I'm going to kind of summarize for you the making of this movie and what it's based on. So this movie's based on a book called The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. I do want to say, I watched Author, the J.T. Leroy Story. Do you know what the first image in that movie is? It's Winona Ryder on stage at a J.T. Leroy reading. That movie starts with Winona Ryder. And I was like, okay, so it's good I'm watching this.
The movie?
Yes, the documentary. The documentary starts with footage of Winona Ryder. And I was like, okay, so this is pretty important context, I think.
Oh, I see. I see what you're talking about. Yeah.
She appears right at the beginning of it.
Yeah.
So this movie is based on a book called The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. It's a collection of 10 short memoirs by the author J.T. Leroy. Stuart, have you ever heard of J.T. Leroy before?
No.
So J.T. Leroy is ostensibly a young, queer, like West Virginian writer, a boy who... dealt with a lot of abuse as a child.
You emphasized boy.
Yes. Who dealt with a lot of abuse as a child.
Yeah.
And was kind of passed around. And this book is supposed to be like a true life memoir of his childhood.
Okay.
JT stands for Jeremiah Terminator.
Okay.
Leroy.
Terminator.
Yes.
Okay.
And this movie is, this book is sold as like the true life, and it's a huge hit. Every, like, this book is a massive bestseller.
Okay.
As is the first book by J.T. Leroy called Sarah.
Okay.
Which is about, which is a fiction novel, but like also inspired by his mother, who's the Aja Argento character in this movie.
Yeah.
What the truth of the matter is that J.T. Leroy is not a real person. J.T. Leroy is the novelist Laura Albert, who as a young girl was abused by her uncle and passed around through various foster care systems and developed an alternate personality named J.T. Leroy.
Oh.
And after talking with psychiatrists, would write memoirs in this fictitious version of herself named J.T. Leroy to process her trauma. And then eventually published the books under the name J.T. Leroy. And she would call like publishers and everything and put on like a Southern voice as J.T. Leroy and fully created this persona of herself.
Okay.
That she would use to process her trauma through the writing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, she was just like ostensibly a fairly like normal person living in San Francisco at the time. And then when the first book comes out and is a huge success, she conscripts her sister-in-law to be the public face of J.T. Leroy, put on sunglasses and a wig and a hat, and be J.T. Leroy in society. And J.T. Leroy becomes extremely famous.
Oh my God.
Becomes friends with Gus Van Sant, the director of Good Will Hunting, who wants to make a movie based on J.T. Leroy's life. Becomes good friends with Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins. And essentially ingratiates himself into Hollywood and celebrity culture and becomes like a massive cultural icon.
Laura Albert's sister-in-law posing as J.T. Leroy.
Yes, but also Laura Albert on the phone pretending to be who in her J.T. Leroy persona.
So she Black Klansman these people?
Kind of. But also she has a third personality named Speedy, who's British.
What?
Who is who she plays in real life. Nobody knows that she's Laura Albert. She is Speedy when she's with J.T. Leroy. She talks like this, isn't it? She has three personalities. And then one of them is co-opted by her sister-in-law for public appearances.
J.T. Leroy.
J.T. Leroy. Who has, at this point, written two best-selling novels.
Oh, my God.
J.T. Leroy gets hired to... Have you ever heard of the movie Elephant?
No.
It's a Gus Van Sant movie about a school shooting. It's inspired by Columbine. Okay. J.T. Leroy is credited as an associate producer on that movie.
Okay.
J.T. Leroy, or Laura Albert, is hired as a writer on Deadwood, the TV show, the Western TV show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard of that.
Yeah, because they want, like, a Southern perspective.
Oh, my God.
This entire, like, hoax, essentially.
Because nobody knows.
Nobody knows. They are successful at pulling this off for 10 years as this book like becomes a bestseller and like politicians are reading it and celebrities are doing readings. Aja Argento reads the book and wants to make a movie out of it. Gus Van Sant's going to make a movie out of the first novel. And it's during the production of this movie, after this movie gets made, that the New York Times runs an expose revealing the truth. That J.T. Leroy is not a real person. He's an amalgamation of three different people. This documentary is crazy. The story, crazier. And the reason why Winona Ryder is in this movie is because J.T. Leroy was seen as like a massive like symbol at the time of like someone who went through abuse and came out the other side and created art. And everyone wants to celebrate them.
Yeah.
And Winona, like, did a lot of readings of J.T. Leroy books.
Oh, my God.
And that's why she's in this movie.
Oh, my God.
I highly recommend, if you have, like, 2 hours to kill one day, watch Author, the J.T. Leroy story. It's on Amazon Prime. It's free. Very good documentary. I don't love the ending, but I think it's overall just like a very interesting look at a complex like series of personalities. So this movie, which
you just
is
blew my fucking world.
This movie,
dude,
which is ostensibly supposed to be based on a true series of memoirs about a boy growing up in the South, going through like various abuses and being passed around, is a fiction novel that is just a woman's way of interpreting her own trauma.
Because Laura was abused.
Yes.
By her uncle.
Yeah.
As a child.
Yes. But the events of this movie and the book are not really what happened. It's just her way of processing her feelings. And they became massive successes.
In the sense that people thought it was the real story.
Yeah, and like they're very well written books, but like people were comparing J.T. Leroy as like the next Faulkner, the next like Mark Twain, telling like these true stories of tough life in the South.
Oh my God. And it wasn't real.
It wasn't real.
I guess the first thing I have to ask is, what was the immediate public perception afterwards, or should we wait till the end?
There was a huge backlash. Huge. Which we'll talk about the end, because it's basically the reason this movie doesn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was seen as a big, like, Oscar chance movie. But obviously, once it turns out the entire circumstances of the making of the movie are fraudulent, it disappears.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then there's so much more really to it. Like Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins, substantially a part of this documentary. He knew about the hoax and he went along with it.
Really?
Yeah. He like was all in on it.
Why?
Lou Reed is in there. Like all these people just like got connected to this like cultural symbol of J.T. Leroy.
So even though J.T. Leroy wasn't real, they felt like J.T. Leroy should be real.
There weren't that many, like Gus Van Sant and all of them didn't know about the falsified, but they all just like got swept up in it. And it just became like this crazy cultural artifact.
Leave it to Cole Bradley to like
let me know about this and unveil this all on me. You should watch the documentary.
I want to watch the documentary.
I didn't want you to watch it before because I wanted to be able to like explain this and get your reaction to it. But you should watch it tonight some night this week.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I really want to watch this now. Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And it came out in 2016, I see.
Yes.
So not super long ago.
Yeah.
And fairly long after the expose.
Yes.
Like a little over a decade.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Because like, and then like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of allegations about like the production of this movie. And what happens after the fact.
Yes. Is that something we want to get into?
I don't want to get too deep into
but
I do just want to quickly summarize it.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, very important. We're talking about a movie about a young boy being abused, and the actor who plays young J.T. Leroy in this movie, Jimmy Bennett, in 2016, I believe, or 2017, October 2017, came out and said that in 2013 he was raped by Aja Argento, the director of this movie, after being groomed on the set of this movie and for the following 10 years.
So they had a relationship after the release of the movie?
Yes.
Okay.
The thing that's crazy timing-wise is that Aja Argento is a accuser of Harvey Weinstein around the same time. Mm-hmm. And part of his downfall. And then it was apparently Jimmy Bennett says, while watching her talk about Harvey Weinstein, he was reminded of his abuse by her at the same time. He's like, oh, yes, this is bringing back these memories that I blocked out. And then he approached her about it. And she paid him off to not talk about it. Whoa. And the person who actually paid him off was Anthony Bourdain, who is Aja Argento's partner at the time, who then kills himself 2 months later. Whoa. And then the allegations come out from Jimmy Bennett after that fact. After that point.
What? there like a whole conspiracy about
there are that? Conspiracies about, which I'm not going to go into, because there's no proof one way or the other.
Right.
But like, it is just this deeply upsetting, like, kind of tale that this movie leaves, the wreckage it leaves in its wake. About like Jimmy Bennett, whose life is essentially kind of ruined by, you know, the grooming he faced on this movie and eventual rape. Which we still have to sit here and talk about this movie and like go through the plot, but it is all this context does make this the most cursed thing we will ever talk about on this show.
Cause then we talk about the movie.
Yes. Which is itself very cursed and upsetting to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get too deep into plot stuff about this movie just because I really think, you just threw me for a fucking loop because I was going to like have this whole thing about like, you know, if people, this movie should only be watched by the people who want to watch this.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds very vague and nonsensical, but I mean like, I think this movie says what it is on its surface.
Yeah.
And so going into it, you kind of know what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna, I watched it last night and I don't have like a stance yet if this movie did it well or gracefully. What do you think?
This movie is like trying to be a shocking, like, tale about the people who you don't think about in this country. Like, it's trying to be an expose about like the abuse that this young boy suffered and that people do live through in this world. And just like how shocking this is.
I think that's the key phrase, shocking.
Yes.
This movie spends a lot of its time to shock you.
Yes.
To upset you.
And the thing about the actual like story is if this was based on a true novel, like let's say J.T. Leroy is a real person,
mm-hmm.
then that opens up the question of like how his like lyrical writing about his childhood
comes into play
compares with showing it on a screen.
Right.
And it really just like, it's hard to kind of grasp like, what level of adaptation is the like the correct level?
Right. Because there have always been a lot of movies that showcase somebody's abusive backstory.
Because it's
showing them into what they've become today.
Because the thing that really throws us for a loop is like if you like this movie could be a conversation about at the art of adaptation and like the differences between a true life memoir and then portraying that on screen.
Yeah.
But it's not a true life memoir ultimately.
Exactly. That's the real wrench into it all. Because then my mind then wants to go into, does the fact that it's not real make it any less impactful?
Yeah. And like, but what is the ultimate impact of this? Like the J.T. Leroy book, if we say J.T. Leroy is real. Which is not. But if he's real, then that book is kind of just like opening up their soul and kind of explaining themselves.
Yeah.
And then there's a difference in a movie. Especially when it's a different artist creating the movie.
Yeah.
Cause like JT is the main character of this movie.
Yeah.
Like you're following his progression. But like when you're not approaching something from their words.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Like what comes off as like honest and true in a book can lose that in the adaptation onto the screen. Because you're no longer seeing it through the eyes of the character. You're seeing it through a lens.
Yeah.
Like you're an observer.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I think that's where the movie falters a bit, which is, I mean, it's hard to say because I don't want to say it's like this movie could have been more disturbing
mm-hmm.
by making us feel more like not as one with the victim and not an observer. Because you're right. I think this movie, we never stray away from Jeremiah's POV.
Yeah.
But you're right, though, in the sense that I don't I feel like I'm an observer in this movie and not watching it. I don't feel like I'm with Jeremiah.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Exactly. That does make sense.
Yeah.
Like this movie ultimately kind of seems like a bunch of...
It almost makes you feel like a participant. Yes. The movie's lens.
This movie makes... Like, the problem I have with this movie, ultimately, is that it feels like the ultimate example of, like, a bunch of actors dressing up and portraying the trauma of someone for sympathy.
Yeah.
Like, it feels
on
false.
The person's part?
Yeah, like, it feels false, the emotion of this movie.
I feel like this is, like, a whole case study of movies that we can bring up. Like...
Because, like, it's kind of... If I tell you like my story about, I'm trying to think of like the worst day of my life. Let's say I just tell you about the worst day of my life. I'm just very open and honest with you.
Yeah.
You're a good friend. So you listen to me and you hear me out and you know, provide support.
Yeah.
Versus like you making a movie about the worst day of my life.
Of your life. Yeah.
And you're still a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And you're making this movie, but like, you're ultimately now just portraying the worst day of my life.
Yeah. I'm portraying the worst day of your life through my words, not your words. Through my words of what I understand. But I guess that goes back to what you were ultimately saying about the art of adaptation.
Yeah.
Is how true to form can you be when you're taking somebody's
real life.
At least
that's the thing that makes
words.
This art is like, well, now it's now we flip it and it's you're taking a fictitious work and you're making a movie out of a fictitious work.
Exactly. And in that case, then it's open to anybody's interpretation. Yeah. Anybody can make a JT Leroy story now and have their own spin on it because it doesn't matter. It wasn't real.
It wasn't a real story.
But if you make it a real story, then there's an element of respect and earnesty and honesty you have to have with it.
Yeah. But like, even if you do like come right out and like it's a fake story and you make this movie and you're just like, well, this is like kind of just an upsetting thing to watch. And I don't know what the point of it is. Is it that you want me to sympathize with this boy? Is that like the goal of this movie? To tell me the story about this boy and make me sympathize with them? Is it trying to... A good director who I think operates in the same vein as this movie is Sean Baker.
Okay.
Who made Tangerine, The Florida Project.
Yeah.
And Red Rocket.
Yeah. Okay.
Which are three movies that have very similar tonality to this.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of following like the people who Hollywood doesn't really make movies about.
Yeah.
Like the really the lower class transgender hookers in Los Angeles. And then Red Rocket's a movie about like essentially a pedophile.
Yeah.
And those movies have this I like his work a lot.
Yeah.
Those movies are upsetting and visceral, but they have this degree of empathy and acknowledgement that this is like fictitious.
Yeah.
Even if a lot of the actors in those movies are pulled from real circumstances like this.
Uh-huh.
There's a certain degree of acknowledgement still that this is like, it's a movie.
Yeah.
Like Willem Dafoe is in it.
Yeah. Florida Project in particular, I feel like has that element a lot to it. Especially the ending, you know? Yeah, I was just, for some reason, you know, a movie popped in my mind, Pursuit of Happiness.
The Will Smith one?
Yeah. Only because in the sense of like, that is a movie that like a real person went through that, wrote about it, and then these filmmakers and artists got together to make a movie about it.
I want to quickly cite, God forbid, I'm citing the Wikipedia or the Rotten Tomatoes consensus for this movie.
Yeah.
It's the film aims to shock, but there's no higher reason for the parade of sordid images except to be cool.
Yeah, that's honestly perfect.
Like, this movie seems less interested in having an emotional, like, response to this boy's journey.
Right. There is no point behind the suffering.
Yes.
And I don't mean to say it's like it has to mean something. That's not what I'm saying. But, like, when you watch somebody going through this much horrible trauma, it's like you're asking yourself, like, what for all these things? And I think where a lot of it needs to come into play is... Asia?
It is not. It's Asia. They say her name a lot in the documentary, which is how I was like, okay, because she's Italian.
Asia Argento.
Yeah.
Like, it's through Sarah's character we should feel a point to all this madness happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean you justify Sarah. That doesn't mean you explain and be like, oh, that's why she's the way she is. But, like, even I'm trying to think of, like, a similar-esque movie like this.
I think a movie about suffering kind of has to have a goal to it. Whether it's, like, Spielberg showing you, like, Schindler's List, a very upsetting movie. The goal of that movie is to be like, never let this happen again.
Because I would say, like, the mom in the Florida Project, you at least get a little bit of, like, understanding.
The Florida Project is a movie that's trying to show you these people who you, when you see them, you're kind of disgusted by them.
Yeah.
And ask you, hey, understand these people and have sympathy for them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, it's trying to be like, it's trying to humanize these people who the audience typically would have disrespect for.
Because you pass these hotels on your way to Disney World.
Yeah.
And you see these people on the streets and you just don't even look
and
at
like
them.
And like a gut reaction is you don't look at them, you're like, oh, that's so disgusting.
Yeah.
Understand these people. Look at them.
Look at them. Let's sit with them for a while. Yeah, this movie does not have that vibe in the slightest.
No.
In the slightest.
This movie is just trying to shock you with how upsetting it all is.
Yes. Okay. That helps me a lot to put it in that packaging of words. Yes. Cause like, especially after you drop that fucking bomb of like, it's not real. Like I really didn't know where to like stand with this movie because I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to ever see it again. But I was watching it thinking like, if this is a real story, like, holy shit. Like,
yeah.
But then it made me really hate the ending that much more because the ending sucks. Mm. It's the worst ending.
Yes.
What do you mean? Like, what do you mean by that ending?
Yeah.
What do you, can we just jump into it?
Yeah. I don't think there's going to be that much summarizing.
Exactly. This little boy gets tormented and abused essentially his entire childhood. Yes. The end.
Sarah, who's played by Asia Argento, also director of the movie, is the young mother of Jeremiah, played by Jimmy Bennett and then Dylan and Cole Sprouse later in the movie.
Yeah.
But she takes him from his foster family because she is his rightful mother who had him taken away from her when she was young. Because she's, was not able to care for him.
Yeah.
And so she takes him back and
that's where the story should end. Yeah.
But she essentially like gives him drugs and introduces him to her chaotic life on the road, just traveling around, sleeping with truckers and moving from one state to another.
She is a sex worker.
Yeah, she's a sex worker. We essentially like go through a series of men who treat her wrong, including Jeremy Renner, weirdly.
Yeah.
Who
probably never wants to talk about this movie.
Yeah, who sleeps with Jimmy Bennett in this movie.
He rapes him. Yeah.
But he, Jeremiah runs away as a result. He gets taken by the police and then his grandmother comes and takes him.
Peter Fonda's in this movie.
Peter Fonda.
Plays the grandfather.
Plays the grandfather who's a radical Christian cult leader.
Yeah.
He gets taken to his grandparents' cult and gets indoctrinated into the ways of far-right Christianity.
Yeah.
He stays there for 3 years. He gets beaten by Ben Foster and Shia LaBeouf's friend from Transformers.
Yeah.
And then we get a time jump and he's Dylan and Cole Sprouse now. Sweet life on deck. I wrote the sweet life on truck. That was what I got.
Okay.
Yeah,
they are living in a semi truck with another one of Sarah's
guys named Kenny, who's a truck driver who also is like a drug dealer.
Yeah. And then that transitions to they're living with Marilyn Manson.
And
Marilyn Manson rapes Jimmy.
Yeah, because Jeremiah is convinced to cross dress
by Sarah. Puts on makeup and a wig.
Yes. And like seduces Marilyn Manson. Who has allegations against him?
Yeah.
Not from this movie, but has a lot of allegations. And I've heard some personal stories of people being like, he's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I just feel so bad for all the child actors that worked on this. Like,
yeah,
I texted you this, but I said like either Jimmy Bennett is the greatest child actor I've ever seen on screen or he went through some fucked up shit on this movie.
Yeah.
Like seriously.
Yeah. This is the, what the child actors are being asked to do in this movie is deeply upsetting.
Yeah. Crossing many lines.
Yes.
That should never be crossed in film.
Yeah. This movie is kind of morally reprehensible in that way.
Yeah.
Aside from all the other stuff about it.
Yeah.
The reason why we have to talk about this movie is because Winona Ryder appears as a psychologist.
Yeah. So after Jimmy Bennett, as Jeremiah, the first time, Jeremiah, how does he get introduced to Winona Ryder? Something happens. Because it's not the drug overdose. The drug overdose happens later.
Yeah, no, he somehow winds up in an institution.
Yeah.
Briefly. And Winona is the psychologist who's trying to get him. It's after he's raped by Jeremy Renner.
Yes.
Before he goes to the Christian cult.
Oh, it's where Jeremiah gets sexually assaulted by Jeremy Renner, and it cuts to the hospital where he's being like operated on, essentially. And then it cuts to the psychiatrist's room. And yeah, Winona Ryder's. And the other thing this movie is also trying to do that I didn't really agree with or understand is that like it's pointing out that like everybody is at fault for this. Did you kind of get that too?
Yeah.
Like the social workers, the hospital staff, everybody just kind of dismisses this kid.
Yeah.
Cause like even like Winona Ryder's playing this off, it's like, no, like you don't play with these toys until it's your time. Or it's like, just tell me it's not your fault. Tell me you understand that we can stop treating you so you can go back to wherever.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way she talks to him in that small performance that she gives. And it's transcended to all the other adults in his life. Even the ones who are supposed to be there to like save him, the social workers, the hospital staff, the police, they all just kind of dismiss this kid. And like, there's a movie to be had where it's like
about the failings of society,
the failings of the system, the failings of the system that allowed this kind of a horrible awfulness to happen. But again, what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
Like if you mean to tell me that like everybody in the system failed Jeremiah, JT Leroy, who did not exist.
Yes.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's so fucking weird. But like, if you're making a movie about a fictitious person who at the time you thought was real.
Because there is a movie to be told about the way that like the systems in America fail children. Because they do. It happens frequently. It happens a lot.
Yeah. But give me a reason to watch that, right?
Yes.
Like, why do I go in a movie to watch the failings of the system in America? And I would say there are many movies that do that in a way that works, some kind of. Of course, they're all like escaping my head now, but like there's so many. There's so many movies like that. The thing I almost thought of was Vanessa Hudgens movie.
Oh, the one we watched for Brendan Fraser?
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Gimme Shelter.
Gimme Shelter.
Very similar movie to this.
And that ends with like an example of where like a part of the system somewhat works, which is the home like, for teenage pregnant girls.
Yeah, the foster system is arguably broken in this country. There's like not like I'm willing to approach with that topic because that seems pretty fair.
Yeah.
But the movie has to,
Why are we jumping into this journey? Like, because you can't just make a movie that says that's actually a great point you bring up. So we start the claim of like the foster care system is broken into a movie. Yeah. Great. Why make a movie about it?
Yeah. To point it out because this movie doesn't really do much with like pointing it out. This movie makes brief forays into that world and then quickly goes back to like the horror.
Yeah, because then if you start with that subject, the system failing children in America, and then you go into the intricate ways that it works and how like logically it could happen that way, that's a movie you could watch.
Yeah.
That's a movie that could actually have a point to it. But this movie does not.
Yeah.
This movie does not go into
it.
It
doesn't
all.
Have a point. That's ultimately the goal is it doesn't have a point.
Right. If there was a line of dialogue that said, we got to release this kid in 24 hours because we don't have the funds to like keep him here. Like, that's at least like something. Like,
even the basic of Winona just like not really caring about this kid and just being there to do her job.
Yeah.
Like, that stuff all works in theory.
In theory.
The movie just doesn't really have an interest in, you know, in it. The movie is quickly trying to get back to the shock.
Yeah, it's like, enough of us trying to help Jeremiah. Now let's go see him do drugs.
Yeah, it wants to get back to the shock, and it wants to get back to abusing these poor child actors.
Mm-hmm. Which is what continues to happen.
Because he winds back up with his mom. It's crazy that Winona's just in this movie because like she thought she was being a part of an important work.
Yeah.
Which is like exposed to not be an important work after she films her scenes.
Here's a touchy subject. Horrible, awful parents like Sarah.
Yeah.
Why do they keep picking up their kids?
They just feel a sense of ownership.
Is that really what it is?
I think in like, this movie that's what it is.
I'm not a psychiatrist and I'm not a psychologist who knows the intricacies of abusive parents who can't ever seem to like own up to the fact that they should not have children.
Yeah.
I guess it was just like
it's biological. When you have a kid,
by the fifth time he's at the hospital and you steal him again to go on your next expedition of abuse and trauma.
Well, the thing in this movie is
nothing
that
nothing clicks for them.
She does love her kid.
No.
Yes.
So I hear what you're saying. Like that the innate biological love.
No, like she actually like this movie does show that she does love the kid.
How?
Just like the way that she like even if she is abusive to him, she does love him.
That doesn't make any sense to me. To me personally,
like it makes sense to me. Like they're like as messy as it is, like. That is the thing where it's just like you love someone so much and you still treat them poorly.
So I for me, it's like where all the abusive topics and issues come in. It's like people have different definitions of what love means. And so I just never understood what Sarah's definition of love for Jeremiah was, which is a fault of the movie, which is why my interpretation is no, she did not love her son. If the movie spent at ever any point in time explaining like why she keeps picking him back up, taking him on the road.
Because like, you can extrapolate the reasons, but the movie never puts the work into
it. No, not at all. Not at all. So for me, watching the movie, she did not love her kid because I'm not convinced she ever did. But from the movie standpoint, you can say like based on the subject matter of what we're talking about, that she loved him because that's just what it is in real life. That abusive parents, even though they're abusive, love their kids. I need to see that in this movie, like where that comes from. Because that's, the reason why I'm hounding on this point is because the end of the movie is what really like sends me over the edge.
They escape a meth lab, which explodes.
Yeah.
And her boyfriend burns to death.
And she's high having on a meth. Psychotic break.
Yeah, she's on meth and having a psychotic break. She poisons Jeremiah because she thinks that he like ate poison.
Well, she thinks like all the food is poison.
Yeah, and so she makes him take.
What is the vial that she calls the antidote?
Ipecac syrup of Ipecac.
Is it just cough syrup?
It causes forceful vomiting. It's like an anti-poison.
Oh, okay. Makes you vomit.
But he drinks too much of it, and then he wakes up in a hospital with his grandmother, who says she's going to take him back to the cult. But then Sarah escapes from the psychiatric ward and comes and busts him out, and they go off together.
And that's how the movie ends.
Yes.
What am I supposed to extrapolate from that? Mm-hmm. What do you extrapolate from that, Jeff?
What I extrapolate from is that if it was a true story, then obviously I have to extrapolate that that's what happened. And it's about like this kind of fucked up, like cursed love that a mother still has for her son, even through all this, or vice versa. But knowing that it's fictitious, all I can really get out of it is just like it's just supposed to shock you, and there's not really a point. Yeah. The whole point, the whole problem with this movie is that there's not really a point.
Yeah,
it's just upsetting, and you're watching, you know, kids do bad things or a kid get abused.
Yeah.
Do you know the Smashing Pumpkins is the score for this movie?
I did not, but it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the movie. That's The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things.
This movie is deceitful.
Yeah, the movie is deeply upsetting.
Yeah,
I don't know what else there is to say.
There's nothing else to say. I told you this last night, Jeff. It's like, it seems like with every actor we've covered, there's a more cursed movie waiting for us. It was the
White Man's Burden.
And Travolta. And then it was the cursed movie for Fraser that we covered. We covered a few. Harebrained.
Harebrained was cursed, but not for the same reasons.
No.
I don't know.
What was the there was a very cursed Brendan Fraser movie.
I mean, there's Sinbad Beyond the Veil of Mists.
Yeah, but we know what we mean.
It was the Twilight of the Golds.
Twilight of
Remember that?
The Golds.
Anti-abortion movie?
Yeah, the anti-gay abortion movie.
Yeah.
I mean, some folks could argue that the whale is cursed. So.
I did argue that.
You did. I disagree, but Pawn Shop Chronicles. It's a cursed movie.
That was a cursed movie. You're just looking through Fraser's filmography.
Inkheart. Yeah, Crash.
Crash. We have to talk about Crash, didn't we?
Have to go. So I guess like Fraser's curse wasn't as bad as Travolta's cursed.
Yeah.
But Winona's cursed.
I mean, Twilight of the Golds was pretty cursed.
Twilight of the Golds is really cursed. This is more cursed than all of those combined.
Yeah.
Do not watch this movie.
Yeah, I would agree.
And if me saying do not watch this movie makes you want to watch this movie, then you should watch this movie. Yeah.
It's, like, it's an upsetting like, movie. You're going to have a bad time.
Right. If that's what you want.
What you should watch is Author, the J.T. LaRoy story, because that's actually a fascinating documentary.
I actually will probably try to watch that at some point. That sounds like a very interesting documentary.
Yes.
Yeah. Have a point to showing misery on screen.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise you're making torture porn.
Especially if it's involving child actors.
Yeah. Especially if it's involving child actors. I just, like, do Dylan and Cole Sprouse ever talk about this movie? The making of it?
I don't know, actually.
Like, do they ever, like, have, like, conversations about it in their now adult lives? I would just think, like, how fucking crazy...
I Googled them.
The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things, Cole Sprouse.
Yeah, I'm not really seeing much from them.
Because Cole Sprouse is the one that took off, right? Dylan Sprouse hasn't really taken off.
I think so.
Pretty sure that's how it works, right? No, I'm just trying to see if like there's any like interviews or whatever or any like press where he like talks about it.
I don't think they really do. I think especially after the J.T. LaRoy story broke, this movie's kind of buried.
They probably just really don't ever want to like address this movie ever again.
Yeah, I don't think anyone involved in this movie really wants to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
Because like I said, like this movie premieres at Cannes in May of 2004.
It gets booed.
I don't think
it gets booed, but
no, J.T. LaRoy attends it and gets a standing ovation.
Are you shitting me?
I'm dead serious.
Oh my god.
Harvey Weinstein is present at the screening. But it premieres at Cannes, and then it gets a July 15th, 2005 release date in the U.S. In between the Cannes premiere and this movie coming out the following year, the J.T. LaRoy story breaks, and now this movie scene is inauthentic. And the studio, which is Palm Pictures, just buries it. They just throw this thing like
in the deepest hole.
Yeah, in the deepest hole. Like it comes out. Yeah. It does get released, but it only makes $211,000, which is like nothing. Because like there's no value in this movie anymore. Now that everyone knows it's like a fabricated story when it was positing to be a true real life thing that happened.
I just wonder if did anybody try to like come out and say like just because it isn't real doesn't mean it's not impactful.
Well, here's the poster says the seductive tale of J.T. LaRoy. That is a tagline.
The seductive tale? What? You're fucking kidding me.
Yeah. So, yeah, this movie gets buried. Winona, as far as I can tell, has never really spoken about J.T. LeRoy again beyond the documentary that she appears in.
Gross. Just icky. I feel like it got slime all over me. I just need to like wipe it all off.
Yeah.
Take me home, Jeff, please.
Take you home?
Take me home. I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah. Anymore. So, but yeah, it comes out, gets pretty scathing reviews, makes no money, and is immediately buried and forgotten about.
Good.
And then, you know, Winona doesn't really talk about it, and no one involved in it really wants to talk about it until abuse allegations come out and payments are thrown, and it's just a mess.
Anthony Bourdain, like, paid off Jimmy Bennett. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the hardest to see full above all things.
Great.
I don't think we have anything else to say. You love that sound effect, don't you? Yeah, I mean, this is the last movie Winona films in her, because she filmed this like a few years prior to it coming out. Mm-hmm. It's the last movie she makes during her like star run.
Right.
Up through Mr. Deeds, but we're already in the third. It comes out after the
talk about like going into era number three for Winona, the first movie.
Yeah. And to a poor start. And don't worry, because next week we get to talk about the Darwin Awards.
Oh my
God. Which promises to be a big winner.
Yeah.
But that's like, that's her first real comeback post shoplifting and community service and whatnot. Wow. So it'll be an interesting conversation next week.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, thank you for listening to this episode of The Hardest to See Full Above All Things. Go home and wash your hands. Thank you for, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we're available on Spotify, Podcast, Google Podcasts, YouTube, pop into our Reddit, r/Trollting, @TrolltingPod on all social media platforms, TrolltingPodcast@gmail.com, @JeffWSweeney on Twitter for me. Special thanks as always to Becca for the graphic design, Michael Van Bodegem-Smith for the theme music. Have a great week, folks, and see you next time.